Please welcome Microsoft Corporate Vice President, Data Group, Joseph Sirosh.
Welcome. We live in an amazing time of innovation in the field of AI. And this conference today is really a tour of this landscape of AI for all of you. We are going to cover an enormous wealth of things, innovations from the core of data science to cognition, to cognitive APIs and the cloud. And my attempt in the presentation I'm doing today in this keynote is to be a little bit of a tour guide showing you some of the core innovative patterns that are coming together as we bring advanced intelligence, the cloud, the Internet of Things, the all of the data that's accumulating, all of them together. Okay? So I'm going to talk about five of them, five cloud intelligence innovations that are core design patterns of the applications that many of you will be building. So just a show of hands first, how many of you are already working in the cloud? Building AI apps in the cloud, excellent. How many of you are using advanced analytics and intelligence of any type? Okay, great show of hands. Hopefully, you will discover through this presentation a number of eye-opening scenarios for building applications of the future. So let me dive in and tell you a little bit about the five patterns I'm going to tell you about. So in many ways today, the cloud is becoming the brain of the connected planet. APIs in the cloud can help every app and connected device become intelligent. So that's a unique transformation in the field of AI. In the past, AI used to be algorithms, synonymous with algorithms running on computers and making a specific application intelligent. But today, there's a difference. You're not just running a few algorithms in the cloud, but you are connecting that with data from sensors all over the world. You're bringing the data in, you're integrating all of that information, you're applying machine learning and AI on top of that, and delivering an application that is continuously learning, and it's evolving and living on the cloud. And the devices and applications connected to it are increasingly learning and becoming intelligent as a result. So today, developers can implement five very powerful patterns of intelligent solutions in the cloud. They are, say, starting from the bottom, I sort of make an analogy to the anatomy of the brain. Intelligence DB, okay, and I'll tell you what that is. The intelligent lake, deep intelligence, and a combination of machine and human intelligence to make apps even more intelligent, and intelligent bots, conversations. And I'll cover all of that. But before I dive farther, let me start with a story. Let me start with a story of how cloud-connected intelligence is making a tremendous difference in human lives. So, in India, there are 400 million children. Half of them don't go to school regularly. And a large number of them drop out. It's a world of enormous loss potential. Consider this, for example, Rohit, a boy, say, born in rural India, goes to school for a few years, drops out because his dad needs him to work in the farm. He could have been a doctor, could have saved many lives, and lived until age 64. Think of another girl, say, Ishita, born in Rajasthan. She drops out of school, but could have been a professor, educated other students, lived until age 92, and there are millions of Rohits and Ishitas. Millions who fail to participate in the modern economy. Millions who fail to realize their potential as human beings. So what could you do? The state of Andhra Pradesh in India is stepping up to change this using data and machine learning. Using data on school admissions, on the demographics of the student, and now, by the way, India has an identity system called Aadhaar, That has got well over 90% penetration. It's a biometric identity system. So you can connect data to every individual in India. And that data in India is actually very useful for improving people's lives. So you can get the student's demographic data, his education, his parents' education, his income. They know data about the school infrastructure. They know about the teachers. And they can now use all of that data to predict the probability that a student will drop out. They also have estimates of how what is a dropout probability is in every school and every district. And when you have that, now you have a powerful system to constantly estimate that probability of school dropout and then take corrective action. And actions can be taken at the individual student level, at the school level, at the infrastructure level. And by the way, one of the main reasons why girls, for example, drop out in Indian schools, anybody know the reason? It's poor toilets. It's poor toilets. Little girls find it very uncomfortable to go to schools with poor toilets. And they can improve that. And today, there are over 600,000 children who have been scored through it in a POC, and this academic year, over 5 million children will be constantly monitored by a machine learning system, lives in the cloud, understanding their probability of dropout and helping improve their lives. And this is not just in India. In US, in Tacoma, the Tacoma School District has done the same thing. They're using data to monitor student populations and improve graduation rates. And the Tacoma School District President will proudly say how they moved the high school graduation rate from 63% to over 80, it's somewhere between 80 and 85% through the use of data. And that's how data touches our lives, and the cloud-hosted services that are deployed make it easy for us to implement that in practice in production systems and roll it out globally. Okay. So the future is going to be intelligence in every software, making better use of the data that is available and improving lives. So with that in mind, here are our axes of innovation in Microsoft. There are three axes of innovation: the axis of the cloud, the axis of data, and the axis of intelligence. Let me tell you what they mean. On the cloud, we innovate on infrastructure to support this vision. In the IaaS, infrastructure as a service, you will see innovations from just very large VMs to ability to provision thousands of VMs at a shot, called VM scale sets, to GPUs. We have some of the latest GPUs. And supporting platforms for developing and deploying software in the cloud. Great level of innovation in making the infrastructure awesome. Even more exciting is a platform as a service, where we take every platform required for computing and make that a service in the cloud. It can be databases, it can be machine learning, it can be business intelligence, it can be things like Microsoft Flow, it can be cognitive APIs. We take everything that's available and make it a platform so when you can just use it without the overhead of managing your infrastructure, even if that's in the cloud. And then software as a service. It can be CRM applications, it can be ERP applications, Microsoft builds them. It can be even finished APIs. For example, in the cloud today, in the Cortana Intelligence Suite, there's a recommendations API. You can hook that up into a website in a very small number of days. You send data from the website through a JavaScript, goes to the API, it gives you recommendations back. And it's extremely easy to deploy, and there are big computer manufacturers, for example, deploying that and getting incredible lift in their shopping cart ads just because they hooked in that recommendations API from Microsoft's cloud. So that's IaaS, PaaS, and SaaS. On the axis of data, we innovate on relational databases and document databases in the cloud and on-premises. Document databases only in the cloud, though, makes web-scale application development extremely easy. And then for analytics, we support data lakes. Azure Data Lake, a job service in the cloud, and Hadoop as a service in the cloud with HD Insight. And then we support the combining of transactions and analytics in databases, allowing what's called hybrid transactional analytical processing with in-memory capabilities, and then in-memory analytics with things like Spark. And so that's the axis of innovation of data. We will keep innovating along that axis so that every type of rich data that's available to us on premises or in the cloud can be harnessed to its best potential for application building. And then now third axis, the most exciting one perhaps, axis of intelligence. Now, traditionally, intelligence used to be about looking in the rearview mirror with business intelligence, BI, slicing and dicing, multidimensional cubes. And we have, with in-memory capabilities, now created tabular BI. You know, data is never have to be built into cubes, but tables, and you can compose among them extremely well, very fast, in memory. Now, as you go farther from being able to understand historical data with BI to real-time data, we have stream analytics. It is a service to put complex event processing in the cloud with some SQL queries, with very simple SQL queries, and data flows through the queries. The queries are standing queries, and you can compute complex things. And then we invested in R in a big way, taking the open source language R, which, by the way, is, according to Spectrum, number 5 in programming language popularity, which is amazing for a special purpose language like R to be number 5 in its rankings. And if there's one language you should learn today that you haven't already, it is R, because of the enormous wealth of statistical libraries and other capabilities available for you to implement analytics and intelligence. And so we have taken R, made it enterprise grade, made it on-prem, made it in the cloud, integrated with Hadoop, integrated with SQL Server databases, R's everywhere. And then machine learning and cognitive APIs. We bring the best of Microsoft research innovations in machine learning and deep learning and cognition, whether it be understanding natural input, face, speech, video, all of that, we make that available in the cloud as part of the Cortana Intelligence Suite. So three axes of innovation: axis of the cloud, axis of data, and axis of intelligence. And the future of applications is going to be at the corner of the cube defined by those three axes, all in the cloud, using all of that rich data available in the databases suited to analyzing that type of data, and combining intelligence, whether it be historical intelligence, streaming intelligence, or advanced AI. And when you bring all of them together, you have the intelligent applications of the future. Very powerful. And now let's see some examples. By the way, before I jump into the examples, I should tell you about the embodiments of these, right? Cortana Intelligence Suite is our embodiment in the cloud for all of these innovations to come together. In many ways, think of it as like Office 365, except for application building. It's for enterprise analytic applications building. We are bringing in all the pieces required, whether it be information management for big data stores or machine learning, intelligence, cognitive APIs, the bot framework, Cortana integration, Cortana, the intelligent assistant on the phones and PCs, specific APIs that are built for applications like recommendations or dashboards, right? It's all of them and integrated so that application building on the cloud is very simple and trivial. And we will keep adding more capabilities, and this becomes the suite for building intelligent applications. Okay. So now let's go to some of the design patterns using these capabilities. The first design pattern I wanted to tell you about is the intelligence DB. So think about it this way. Let's say you wanted intelligence to go blazing fast. Intelligence being, at the end of the day, integration of data, very rich data, analyzing, aggregating them, and putting predictive analytics or other intelligence on top of that data. Now, if you think about how Actually, let me make an analogy. Think about a time when applications were built before databases came on this planet. The applications had to manage the data on their own before databases. They had to index the data, they had to store the data, they had to do query planning, they had to do security, they had to do all of that complex things in the application itself. These applications were incredibly unwieldy, very hard to build, very hard to manage. The way machine learning applications are built today is very much in the same way. The application pulls the data from databases. It joins them, integrates them. It creates variables. It then applies models. The model management is done in the application. The application itself is so complex, No wonder you see very few intelligent applications today. The application is very complex to do. That's like the time before databases. When databases came in, databases created a wonderful abstraction. It separated out the data from the application. The database now manages the data, its storage, its indexing, its query optimization. It manages access control, manages security. That abstraction was incredibly important for freeing up applications. And we are doing now exactly the same thing for machine learning and intelligence. And how are we doing it? We are pushing intelligence to where the data lives. Instead of the variable computations and the model management and all of that living in the application, now it goes and lives in the DB, right next to the data. And what happens then? The business logic, instead of being this complex intelligence logic, instead of living in the application, can now live as stored procedures in a database. And databases, by the way, provide great features for managing all of this. Okay, now intelligence becomes, models become like data. And then you can have incredibly good management. Okay, models can be managed in the database, its performance can be reported, its access can be controlled, and moreover, that particular analytical model, because it lives in a database, can be shared among multiple applications. Okay, otherwise it's locked up in the application. All great. But even more interestingly, what happens is it allows incredible speed. The speed that you get is sometimes 100x to 1000x because the data doesn't have to move. It's computed inside the database. Okay, so SQL Server, the SQL Server 2016, today is not just a regular database, it is an intelligence DB, because intelligence can be hosted in the database just like data. And it can now live in on-premises or in the cloud. It can be on Linux or Windows. It can support any data. It even supports JSON data. And R is integrated into it. And you can have R queries. And you will shortly see a demo of that capability. So it becomes the platform for data-driven intelligence. And by the way, remember, SQL Server can be on-prem or in the cloud and can be part of the whole cloud story. So, to show the incredible speed, we created a real demo. And it's not just a demo. We just showed that scoring a machine learning model in a real application at over 1 million predictions per second. Okay? And that's possible because of the intelligence living in the database. And to show that, let me invite Wee-Hong Tok. He's a senior data scientist at Microsoft, and he's going to show a very sophisticated analytical model running inside of a SQL Server database with amazing performance. Wee-Hong?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So earlier on, Joseph talked about the intelligent base, right? The pattern where you push intelligence to the data. Now today, we're going to show you a new breed of applications that takes this concept of an intelligent base, right, and marries the latest advancement in OLTP, machine learning, to give you advanced insights. Now, take note, this is only made possible. This disruption is only made possible by combining the best of both worlds, SQL Server and R. Now, let me show you and start off by showing you the demo. Now, before I get into the demo, one of the things you should think about is today, a lot of financial services companies processes a lot of credit card transactions or loan applications. Now, every time each one of these credit card transactions or loan applications needs to be processed, right, or when it is processed, there are lots of decisions that are made in the background. Now, many a times, a lot of these decisions that are made in the background are best made with predictive models, right? For example, if you have a credit card transaction, you want to determine whether the transaction is fraudulent, or if you have a loan application, you want to determine whether the loan application will be processed on time. Now, in this demo, we're going to show you a live demo, right? And that's the reason why you see me connected to many machines, because this sits in a lab back in Redmond. This live demo is going to show you how we combine SQL Server and R to do real-time scoring of huge amount of transactions per second. Now, before I get into this demo, let's take a look at the transaction tables that we have. So I do a select. In this case, this is a very simple transaction table that has transaction ID. It has the transaction amount in US dollars. And if I scroll from left to right, you see that this captures where the transaction originated, right? And even what is your payment method. Now, because of SQL Server 2016 and R, now we can inbuild all this R code as a stored procedure that can be invoked by an application, the new breed of application that I told you about. Now, let's take a look at how this looks like. Let me close the screen. Now, what you're seeing here is a stored procedure that we're going to use later in the demo that is going to score the new transaction for potential fraud. And if you look at this, this is a really standard stored procedure that marries SQL statements. And if I scroll from top to bottom, you'll see that we are using the RevoScaleR function, rxpredict, to predict whether the transaction is a fraudulent transaction. Right? Now, once we have done all this, we have the transaction, we have stored procedure that's going to score whether an incoming transaction is fraudulent. Let's take a look and create lots of transactions. Now, to show you that, we built a demo, a very simple application. Now, this very simple application does amazing things back end. Let's start off by generating lots of transactions. So I bring the slider up to 3. Now, just for context, why did I start off with 3 transactions per second? 3 transactions per second is really, on a typical day, what the kind of volume or the rate at which a Bitcoin network processes the transactions. Right? And just to put that again in perspective, in a typical day on a busy Bitcoin network, there's about 260,000 transactions that has been processed. Now, let's bring this up slightly further. 56,000. Now, 56,000 turns out to be a really special number. 56,000 transactions per second is the maximum capacity of the Visa network last year, right? And again, to put that into even more perspective, with 56,000 transactions per second, right, on a typical day, you have billions of transactions. Now, the question is, do I dare to bring this up to 1 million transactions per second? What do you guys think? You sure? Okay. Now, and early on, you also see that Joseph gave me a really bold goal. Not only do I have to bring this up to 1 million transactions per second, I have to score this at 1 million transactions per second. Okay, so let's do this interesting thing. And my hands are trembling at this moment, but let's do it. 1 million transactions per second. Now, we have not started scoring yet. I'm going to click the detect fraud later. But right now, back end, what is happening, just to give you a sense of what's happening under the hood, when I bring this up to 1 million transactions per second, we have data generator that's generating the transactional data that you saw earlier. This gets ingested into SQL Server, but more specifically, in-memory table in SQL Server with column store enabled. Now, as this gets caught when I click on the detect fraud button, what is going to happen? That stored procedure that you saw earlier is going to score each and every one of these 1 million transactions, right? And it's going to return result on whether it's a potential fraud or not. And here, this application will then tell you the predictions per second. And that's the second part of the demo that I tremble, but let's try. When I click detect fraud, now the system is warming up. You see, it's 700, 600, 700, 800. And it's going to be a very awkward moment. 900. Wow. It's going up. It's going up again. 1 million transactions per second and 1 million predictions per second. Now, I achieved the bold goal of 1 million predictions per second. Back to you, Joseph.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks a lot, Joseph.
Anyway, can you tell us what machine we ran this on?
So this machine is a 4-socket server, a commodity hardware, right? And it's not some fancy big hardware that you see. 1 million predictions per second, everyone. Thank you, Joseph.
Awesome. Thank you. Give him a big hand. And it's, I believe, a gradient-boosted decision tree with 30 to 50 variables or so hosted in. It's a real serious scoring application. And what you saw was not just a regular database, it was the in-memory tables. There was in-memory column stores that were doing analytics in-memory. And the magic of the R model, it was executing with the in-memory computations. So all of them bringing together is what makes this possible. Amazing. So let's now hear one customer story. Now, it's not just a demo. There are leading customers who are using very advanced analytics with SQL Server in this fashion to make a huge difference. And PROS Revenue Management, PROS, and based out of Houston, is one such. And let me show you how they build these kinds of capabilities for a very revolutionary application. And let me invite John Salch, who is the Vice President of Technology and Platforms at PROS.
First, I want to say thanks, Joseph, for inviting me to be here. And I also want to say thanks to all the people back at PROS that do all of the amazing things that I get to come talk about at these conferences. The other interesting thing, it's amazing to see how much brain power there is in this room. It's really amazing. The future is very bright. So how many of you, I'm going to ask you a question, how many of you flew to the conference on a commercial airliner and bought a ticket? Pretty much almost everybody. You're staying in a hotel room here in Atlanta. Did you ever wonder how the airline decided what to charge you for that ticket? And what about the guy sitting next to you on the plane? Did he pay the same price or maybe more or maybe less? What about the laptop you're taking notes on right now or the mobile device you're using? Did you ever wonder how the salesperson who sold it to your IT department, how they decided what to charge to your company? Or if even there was a salesperson involved, maybe it was an e-commerce transaction, and how did that price get created? So now that you hate me for setting airline prices, in all seriousness, at PROS, we've been building business software for over 30 years, solving commerce problems for the world using data science and processing massive amounts of data. One thing we've learned is you've got to get data science beyond the lab. You got to get it into production, solving real-world business problems, really improving the business. That's why we're very excited to see R being added to SQL Server. It really presents a unique opportunity to bring the data science world together with the IT world and really improve business outcomes. The capabilities in R, all of the decades of science and research that have gone into it, coupled with the trusted data platform that is SQL Server, really is an amazing opportunity to get those two worlds together. And it's very important for us when doing this to get beyond just describing the data. We have to even get beyond just making predictions. We need to build software that prescribes what the user should do next, what that individual user should do next. And we even need to build software that's autonomous, it can make its own decisions without needing a user there. One of PROS' customers, it's just a typical airline. They respond to over 100 million unique, individualized price requests each day. We use Bayesian statistics, linear programming, dynamic programming, and a slew of other technology to create price curves. Oh, and by the way, I didn't tell you, we have to answer these responses in under 200 milliseconds. So you really have to respond quickly. So as you can see, it's pretty impossible for humans to do this, right? Under 200 milliseconds, using all the data, really understanding the market, economics. So you really need autonomous software to do this. And using Azure with its global footprint and with its unified platform really makes this a lot easier for us to do. In fact, 57% of the over 3.5 billion annual people who travel on planes are touched by our software. It's pretty amazing. Let me tell you another example. We went too, huh? I clicked it too fast. One other example, another PROS customer, a B2B customer. They use our software to automatically generate renewals for their subscription business. So their customers are businesses, they subscribe to services. You would know this company, very large company. And the salespeople go out and talk to the customers and try to renew, get the customer to renew. So we use data science, machine learning to generate renewals automatically. These renewals have targeted prices just for that one customer. We also look at the transaction data and we figure out what products and services you could cross-sell to that customer. What are they likely to buy? What are they likely to buy up into? What other services should I offer that customer? It really levels the playing field between the salesperson and the procurement department. This software, as I said, uses machine learning and segmentation, a whole bunch of other algorithms to determine these artifacts that we load into the opportunity in the CRM. Our software runs on R. When we ran it on SQL Server, our services in 2016, the performance went up by a factor of 100. Not 100%, a factor of 100. So this really kind of woke us up that we could use R in production setting versus just having it be in the lab and not really be something we'd ever want to run in production. It's truly amazing. I'm going to steal Joseph's slides here. So data science really makes all of this possible. It's all of the things that you do that really make these types of problems be solved. One last comment I want to make. It's really important that this group, that we really be open to all the different types of technology and data science that exist out there and not just get stuck in one corner. Statistics, which is my background, can be combined with industrial engineering, artificial intelligence, machine learning, even cognitive, to create new and unique solutions that really improve business experiences. And business experiences are both people who buy things and also the salesperson, the user of the software who goes out and tries to get a transaction to happen. We really need to improve those experiences, and we need to be open-minded about what we choose and how we do this. So PROS has been doing this for 30 years. And our platform is Microsoft. Microsoft, we found, is the only vendor that brings together all of these capabilities in one place, on one common platform, and really delivers it in a way that global businesses and these enterprises, large enterprises, trust. And we're very proud to innovate with Microsoft. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, so PROS is one of those companies who are all in the cloud. They're a public company. Their application for revenue management is entirely running on Microsoft Azure, using SQL Server with R, and getting all of the benefits of that integration and bringing that to their customers. So now if you think about how the Intelligence DB pattern is implemented, now there are several ways of implementing this. So you heard about the SQL Server plus R. It can be on-premises. It can be on virtual machines in the cloud. It can be in the future in the PaaS service, Azure SQL DB service integrated with R. It can be inside a SQL Server data warehouse, an enterprise data warehouse that has R embedded in it. There is also a data science virtual machine available today with SQL Server on Azure that integrates all of this. And the beauty of this, by the way, is that deep integration makes the whole architecture very simple. Very large number of people know how to use and manage a SQL Server. Now you can have analytics in that same place instead of on a separate Hadoop cluster or a separate place, separate server. All of that creates great simplicity and great speed. Great. So now let's go to the next pattern. It's a similar pattern, but in the context of data lakes, the intelligent lake pattern. Now, what I'm going to show you is something more than just analytics, just standard analytics on a very large data lake. We're looking to bring not just R or just regular type of intelligence, but any type of computation to petabytes of data through extensibility. So think about a platform like Azure Data Lake. Azure Data Lake has built in a unique feature you won't find in any other data lake platform, and that is the ability to install, through user-defined functions, arbitrary computations into it. So today you can put .NET libraries and execute that at scale on petabytes of data, and you can leverage that capability to bring in any type of intelligence. So for example, I talked to you earlier about all of the cognitive services that you will hear about in the future, later in the presentation. I'm going to show some of those demos running on the intelligent data lake on enormous amount of data. So let's talk about that platform a little bit, Azure Data Lake. Azure Data Lake is really at two services. One, a very large petabyte, exabyte scale file system for analytics called Azure Data Lake Store. It has a Hadoop file system API, an HDFS API. And then the second is Azure Data Lake Analytics, which is built on Yarn containers, runs across thousands of machines, and it allows distributed computation. And on that, we have USQL as a language. It is a variant of the T-SQL language, but it has extensibility, and it supports .NET, and it supports this kind of extensibility that I talked about. Right? And so now, you can run very large distributed computations on that Yarn layer using USQL. And in the future, by the way, we will have Hive and Spark supported in that Azure Data Lake layer as well. So you host big amount of data in the store. You do big computation up in Azure Data Lake Analytics. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the cognitive service APIs that I mentioned. What are cognitive service APIs? They are APIs for processing natural human input. Think about cognitive input. Input can be images, it can be vision, it can be speech, it can be natural language, it can be emotions. It can be all of those. And there's even more. So Microsoft today, with innovation from Microsoft Research, supports about 35 different cognitive service APIs today in the cloud, and that list is growing. So that's our vehicle for bringing in all of the cutting-edge innovation in cognitive AI, the cognitive service API. These are integrated in the Cortana Intelligence Suite. So you will see that list. There's vision APIs. There's captioning APIs for images. There's speech. There's language, processing language. In fact, it can do key phrase extraction, sentiment analysis, and all of that. There's knowledge APIs, very powerful search powered by Bing, etc. And there's a long list. So, by the way, here are a few fun applications we built to showcase the power of it. How many of you here have seen howold.net? Quite a few hands, yeah. You know, you upload a picture into it, and it tells you how old you look in that picture. Okay, how old do you look? It can't tell you how old you actually are. Make sure you take a look at it before you go on your next date. there is the CaptionBot API. You can upload a product. You can upload a picture. It automatically captions it. There is a whatdog.net, by the way. And I can upload a human being's picture. It'll tell you what dog that human being's picture looks like. It identifies dog breeds too, by the way. And the most recognition we got was when Cosmo said Microsoft just released the best iPhone app ever. It's a selfie app. And so these are some fun APIs that were used to create some of these fun apps. Now, let's now take that to big cognition. What do I mean by big cognition? It's really about taking cognitive APIs and SDKs and running it on big data. On batch modes. So imagine you had millions or billions even of pictures you wanted to caption, or videos you wanted to caption, or PDFs you wanted to OCR, or you want to understand emotion. How would you do it at that enormous bulk, at that scale? Well, what you do is you take that intelligence, bring that next to the data in Azure Data Lake. And so it's best shown through a demo. To show you that demo, let me invite Matt Winkler, who is the principal PM manager at Microsoft. Matt, could you join us and show us a demo?
All right, good morning, everybody. So as Joseph mentioned, some interesting things happen when you take the power of these intelligence APIs and you think about putting them inside of a big data engine. So let's go ahead and switch to the demo. What I'm going to start off with here is I've got USQL inside of Data Lake Analytics. And I've got a data set that consists of about a million images. These images are pictures of people, picture of people with dogs, in all sorts of poses at weddings and whatnot. And what I'd like to be able to do is understand these. Now, the cognitive APIs give me a very powerful way to do that through something called the Vision API. With the Vision API, I can walk up to any of those images, and I can get back what's going on in the image. It'll actually generate a caption for me. It'll say, I think I see a man walking with a dog on the beach. It'll also return a set of tags for all of the various objects that get recognized inside the picture. And so that's wrapped up in a nice REST API. I can go ahead and use that. But what about if I've got a million images? How am I going to process that? And once I process it, how am I going to actually make sense out of what's happening in all of those million images? And so what we're showing here is we've taken that DLL that sits behind the Cognitive Services Vision API, and we've put that inside of uSQL. And so here, this is uSQL. And what I'm doing here is processing through those million different faces. And as I do that, I want to do two things. I want to tag them, and I want to pull out the emotion. Now, the cool thing about this is once I've done this, these are just other columns. So this just becomes SQL the whole rest of the way. And so I can do very simple things like take the number of objects. I can take the tags and find all of the pictures that have dogs or cats in them. And I can do all of the types of analytics that I want to be able to do. Now, the cool thing about Azure Data Lake Analytics, where the power really comes in here, is when I actually go to run this job. Data Lake Analytics allows me to, on demand, specify how much compute I want to apply to this problem. I'm super anxious to get all of these results back, so I'm going to take the slider and slide it to 1,000. That means once I click go, 1,000 different machines in Azure are going to spin up, and in a matter of seconds, they're going to start processing those million images. And they're going to perform all of the queries that I've written in this script. Now, this takes about 7 minutes to run, so I'm just going to skip ahead to the end. I've gone ahead and produced these, and you'll see I get some interesting summary statistics here in Power BI. So I can see, what is the distribution of tags? Well, for 900,000 of them, there's a person in it. And that's not surprising, because it's a data set of pictures of people. But I can also see things like, hey, outdoor, wall, people smiling, people in a suit. So we've probably got a bunch of clip art of business people who are hanging out in suits. And this gives me kind of a fun way to explore what's going on. I've also created a histogram for the number of objects that are in the picture. And this lets me understand how complex is this set of pictures that I have. And here you'll see, for the most part, I have somewhere between 2 and 4 objects in the bulk of the images. So now, let's go beyond that and talk about how we can do analytics on top of a large volume of text. And so the text that we're going to use is War and Peace. This is a pinnacle of world literature written by Tolstoy in the 1800s. It's a massive book. I don't know how many folks have read it. It's about 1,500 pages long. It's spread over 15 major books with 50 major characters. And so this is pretty intimidating for someone to walk up to and say, hey, for my weekend project, I'm going to start reading War and Peace. And so we're going to see how we can take the intelligence APIs and our big data engines to see if we can create something a little interesting on top of this. So what we're going to start off with here, this is just some text from Chapter 3, Book 1. Now, what I'd like to be able to do here is, to start to understand this, I want to extract what are the key phrases. And in order to do that, I'm going to use the Text Analytics API, which is available as part of Cognitive Services. So today, you can deploy these. All of you can walk up to the Azure portal and deploy these. Just click Text Analytics here. You can go ahead and get up and running. And then what I've done is I've just written a little bit of Python code. All this does is it takes this chunk of text, and it's going to throw it off and return back to me the key phrases. So let's go ahead and run this and see what happens. And you'll see already it starts to return a number of the main characters. Now, in order to really get insight out of this, though, I'd have to start doing a little bit more work. I'd have to start creating maps of when do the characters appear, what's the tone in which in the sentences and paragraphs where they appear. And so I'm going to start building out this data flow. This, again, is a really nice problem for something like uSQL, where what you can see here is we've taken the DLL that sits behind the Text Analytics API. And now as I read through War and Peace, I'm going to first extract all the key phrases. Then the next time I read through it, I'm also going to extract all the sentiment of the paragraphs. Now this is really cool because I can take these two things and join them together. And when I do that, I now understand the sentiment of the overall paragraph in which the keywords appear. So if I see a character name, I can start to understand, oh, was this a positive paragraph or a negative paragraph? This is going to go produce a bunch of text, and so Senja, who's one of the visualization experts on our team, actually helped me put together a really nice UI on top of this for me to start to understand War and Peace. And so this is a set of D3 visualizations on top of War and Peace. I mentioned the problem of 50 major characters going through the entire arc of the book, and what this allows me to do is understand, hey, Andrew or Andre shows up in almost all of the books. A number of other characters, you know, Lorraine, for instance, only shows up in book one, but plays a big enough part to get noticed. And Natasha also surfaces in all of the books in one of the epilogues. So this lets me understand a little bit, hey, in book seven, what are the characters I need to look out for? And now we've done this with hardly any understanding of what's actually happening in War and Peace. Now I'd like to be able to roll through the book and understand, so I'm going to hit play here. This is going to start walking me through the various chapters in the individual books, and we'll see, hey, it looks like book four was just a high point. We're going back up, that went down there a little bit. And so imagine this assisting me as I go read through the text. The final thing that we'd like to do here, though, is actually trace the arc of the characters through the book. And so we've built this heat map down here, which tracks when the characters appear in an individual book and what's the sentiment. And so, again, I still don't understand hardly anything about War and Peace, but I can drill in here for some of those characters which appear in most of the books. And I can see, you know, for Andre, things kind of start out a little down, but man, they really look up in book six. Natasha, who also surfaces throughout most of the book, kind of has a pretty average books one through five, but then book six, things kind of go south. Now, I actually talked to someone who's read the book. What happens in book six is that I didn't get the cliff notes. I thought about doing that, but there's somebody on our team who's just, he spent three quarters of a year in high school reading War and Peace, and he loves to talk about it. So in book six, Andre and Natasha fall in love. So it explains what the heck is going on with Andre. He's super, super happy. What's going on with Natasha there? You know, she fell in love. This should be good. It turns out what happens in book six for Natasha is not only does she fall in love, but also her family goes bankrupt, and that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the book for all of the troubles that she's going to have. And so with very little understanding of the actual book, War and Peace, using text analytics and some big data technologies, we've been able to create a pretty rich interactive guide on top of the text. And the cool thing about this, War and Peace, even though it's a really big book, isn't really big data. But we're running it in an engine that would let us run against an arbitrarily large amount of text. And so I could take this and go generate this same type of experience for every book in the Library of Congress or the entire internet. And so this is the magic of when you take the intelligence that sits inside the cognitive services APIs and mash that up with a big data engine. So thank you. Everyone enjoy War and Peace. Joseph.
Thank you. Awesome demo. So the code for all of this is actually on GitHub. You can actually play with it. It's not just something we built for a demo. And so the era of big cognition is here. And think about it this way, by the way. Software has so far been, in many ways, sterile. Unable to understand emotion, unable to use the emotional data and combine it with anything else. You know, join it, query it, use it in some intelligent way. Now all of that is becoming possible. By the way, you can extract emotion from images. You can extract emotion from speech. You just saw sentiment extraction from text. You can do all of this in bulk. And where this particular capability of the intelligent lake really shines is the fact that you can do query by content on unstructured data, meaning that all unstructured data like images, their content, whether it be emotion or age or other features, become extractable in a database engine like Azure Data Lake, and it just becomes like any other data. So you can now join it with every other type of data you have and do incredibly powerful analytics and intelligence. And that's what I mean by big cognition, okay? It's not just extracting one piece at a time, not just about understanding emotion or whether there's an object in an image, but it's about joining it with all other data so you can do magic with it. And so here, there are many ways of doing intelligent lakes. Azure Data Lake plus Cognitive Services is one. You can have Spark on Azure today with Hadoop and Spark and R on top of it, and you can put machine learning APIs and algorithms in there, and you can do extensibility, and you can do analytics on Spark. And HD Insight plus R alone also is another such platform. And by the way, next step would be then, take these platforms and see if we can deal with real-time flowing data, say from the Internet of Things. And that leads to yet another dimension of innovation. And so, for example, think of these applications. Right now, there are a number of amazing intelligent Internet of Things applications being built today, IoT, if you want to call it that. For example, Rolls-Royce is a partner. We are streaming data from their jet engines, and we are looking for predictive patterns to detect failure risk or anomalies or maintenance things. There's a new IoT-enabled app that lets Indy 500 fans tap into live racing data. There is Hendrick Motorsports, by the way, that's using Azure machine learning to predict when a racing car needs a pit stop, and you can precisely time it and optimize the race so that the cars have to take the fewest pit stops, and so you have a much higher chance of winning the race. And these things are actually quite amazing and are transforming lives. And I wanted to now show a story, but it actually touches human lives in some profound ways. And this is a story of Dymaxia, a startup, and they're using the Internet of Things and the intelligence to be able to help children with autism. And to tell you more about that story, let me invite Aseem, who is a co-founder of Dymaxia. Aseem? Aseem, what does Dymaxia do?
So we're developing an anxiety meter for children with autism, a way to proactively manage anxiety. So believe it or not, therapists right now will ask the child, do you feel like your engine is running or is your volcano erupting, as a way to assess anxiety and some of the best tools they have right now. We've all asked the child, you know, how was your day or how do you feel? And more often than not, you don't get an answer of substance. So we're looking to solve this through the IoT and using the Internet of Things to help children better manage their anxiety. To make matters worse, a child with autism has trouble understanding their internal emotions and has trouble conveying that verbally to his caregivers and those around him. So using those metrics, right now we're looking at heart rate primarily, using an off-the-shelf wearable wristband like a Microsoft band, sending that via Bluetooth to a smartphone or tablet and being able to proactively manage anxiety. So a child in the classroom, he might look fine and be attending to some math homework, right? Everything looks good from the outside, but inside he might be boiling, and he wouldn't even recognize that until this emotional meltdown that really disturbs his day, and it can really disrupt the classroom. So we're looking to intervene and provide prompts to help manage that anxiety before it becomes a problem.
So both the children and the caregivers can have better control of their lives.
Absolutely.
Okay. And what inspired you to build this?
Well, many years ago, I was chatting with my cousin, and she's a mother of a child with autism. At this time, he was around 7 or 8 years of age, and I asked my cousin, how is he developing? And she said, you know, Asim, he's doing okay. He's good. He's not doing too bad, but, you know, he won't ever go to university. He won't get a good job. He won't get married. He won't leave my house. And this is a mother who has left no stone unturned for her child. She's put every penny she has into providing her children with the best possible care. To hear her have no optimism for her child's future, to hear her struggle, to hear her lack of hope was heartbreaking. And it's been an instrumental driving force for Dymaxia.
That's very touching. Now, would you be able to tell us something about the architecture and how that is built?
Yeah, well, we're using the Azure Cloud Platform. It's been really beneficial for us to get on that quickly and be able to iterate and get testing on it. And the big importance for us is the analytics, the stream analytics, being able to analyze what's happening in real time and provide that feedback to caregivers. So when parents at the end of the day, they might be able to track the child's anxiety. They might not remember in the day, oh, at 4 p.m. he had an emotional meltdown. But being able to see that at the end of the day or over a course of weeks or months, see how the child is progressing throughout days. Maybe every Monday at 4 p.m., he has that emotional meltdown. Being able to show that to the therapists and clinicians is just a way to bring the entire team, the caregiving team around the child, all connected and better understand what the child goes through on a day-to-day basis.
That's great. And what is the future? Where are you taking us?
So we're looking right now to empower the lives of families with autism, help the child and help the families. We all know how a disorder can affect not just the individual, but the extended family around it. And then we know anxiety is a huge problem in our communities. In North America, anxiety affects a large percentage of the population, and being able to help those individuals as well get over the hurdles of day-to-day living, that things that other people might take for granted, you know, maybe being on stage can be anxious, maybe talking in front of a lot of audience, maybe going to the grocery store and having a small interaction with the cashier can be anxiety invoking for people. Being able to mitigate those things and help them get on with their day-to-day lives is where we want to impact people.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's an amazing effort. The Internet of Intelligent Things is truly emerging. So let's now talk about the third pattern, deep intelligence. So deep learning software, it looks to mimic the way the brain works. And it sort of uses what are called very deep neural networks with lots of layers to extract extremely sophisticated patterns that are otherwise not easy to learn with traditional statistical methods, and embed them in models that can then predict things. And this has been really enabled in the last decade by incredible amounts of compute that's now available with GPUs, with the cloud, et cetera. And such deep learning is now everywhere. It is truly a huge revolution in the state of machine learning and AI. It's used for image classification and speech recognition. All the state-of-the-art speech recognizers today have deep neural networks embedded in them. Language translation, language processing, sentiment analysis, and so on. In medicine and biology, for cancer cell detection, for diabetics grading, for drug discovery. In media and entertainment, for video captioning, for video search, real-time translation. In security and defense, and in autonomous machines, self-driving cars, lane tracking, recognizing traffic signs, all of these are now powered by deep learning. And here's an example of the power of deep learning, the captioning that it's able to do. You can take an image, it's now able to detect all the key elements and label them. And this is based on what's called an ImageNet dataset. It can correctly label different pieces, and it can give you a probability of recognition. That's a score that you see next to it. So what is really deep learning? You know, this revolution started now almost a decade ago, and when people came up with some interesting techniques to train multi-layered neural networks. So the first one, AlexNet, had 8 layers. Then the next one in 2014, that was the leader in this ImageNet competition, at 19. GoogleNet in 2014 had 22 layers, and that won the ImageNet competition. And now we are up to 152 layers. It's really deep, deep, deep network at Microsoft. That's a champion in the ImageNet competition. So here's a graph that shows the progress in image recognition that's been made over the last few years, from 2010 to 2015, in what's called the ImageNet classification top 5 error rate. And the latest one with that 152-layer network is 3.5%. That, by the way, exceeds human capability to label on that same data set. It's pretty amazing. So to enable this today, we have now in Azure very, very powerful compute infrastructure. So the Azure N-Series GPUs that is available now in preview, they are the fastest available in the cloud. They have the K80 and M60 GPUs with cutting-edge, high-efficiency technologies, things like discrete device assignment that brings like a totally new level of deep learning capability to the cloud. And by the way, these DNNs can be trained using our data science VM that's available today on Azure. So the data science VM can be instantiated on a GPU VM, and you can use CNTK, Computational Network Toolkit, from Microsoft, or even TensorFlow, or any of the open source packages on that GPU. So you can train deep networks. The trained deep networks can then be embedded in Intelligent Lake, can be embedded in SQL Server. So there are multiple ways. So there's the data science VM, and then you can also run, by the way, massive training jobs on Azure using the Azure Batch service. What's the major showing to the right. So there are recipes that we have published that allow you to harness thousands of GPU VMs, if you like, and run parallel training across all of them. So the cloud liberates you in a big way when you're doing experimentation with deep neural networks and doing so at scale. So now I wanted to take this to, again, an application scenario. There is a very innovative startup in Norway that is using deep neural networks to revolutionize energy management. Let me first play a video, and then I'll bring their CEO to tell us the story. So let's play this video, the connected drone.
eSmart Systems' connected drone adds intelligence and mobility to big data analysis, and it's a game changer. The current methods of power line inspections are slow, expensive, and dangerous. Connected drone is replacing manual processes with Azure-powered machine intelligence. Drones are sent out on beyond line of sight missions. Data is collected using multiple sensors and streamed to Azure. Vast amounts of data is sent through powerline-optimized deep learning algorithms. Connected drone updates component registries and pinpoints faults and weaknesses in this vital infrastructure. Connected drone is feeling the pulse of the power grid and keeps the power flowing.
And now let me invite the Chief Analytics Officer of eSmart Systems, Davide, to share his story.
Thank you. First, I would like to thank for this great opportunity of sharing an exciting story with you today. First, a few words about eSmart Systems. We are a small, dynamic, and young company out of remote Norway that have made an early decision of basing all of our products completely on the Microsoft Azure platform. And this has given us a global reach that was really unthinkable just a few years ago. Our mission is to bring big data analytics to utilities and smart cities. And we have a special focus on electric utilities, where we have decades of experience and a lot of deep knowledge. We have been developing analytics solutions for power utilities for many years, but what the story I'm bringing on the stage today is really what I believe a next step change in how we're able to deliver value to our customers through Azure. We call it the connected drone, and in a way, we can say that it's a way of making Azure intelligence mobile. We started with developing the connected drone out of a vision of trying to combine drones with intelligence on the cloud. And we believe that there was, out of this combination, there was really a positive disruptive value that we could deliver to our customers. So our objective is to support inspections of power lines that today are performed by ground crews that walk the lines, miles and miles and miles of lines, or by through dangerous helicopter missions to monitor the power lines. And if there is one place where you don't want to be with an helicopter, is near high power lines. So with connected drone, we use deep learning to try to automate as much as possible this inspection process. So the connected drone covers all stages of the inspection process, from the initiations of the inspection plan, the planning of the drone mission, and then we have the execution of the mission. So we fly the drone, and then we stream data live to Azure, and we analyze the data on Azure. We use deep neural networks to do this. We use a different type of neural networks, from the faster RCNN that are based on the ResNet network that Joseph just mentioned, to other methods like a single shot to multi-box detectors and so forth. But all of this is deployed on Azure GPUs. Let me show you some example of the results that we get. Here you see some analysis of both still images and videos, and you see how we are able to recognize objects in real time. We can process video from between 10 and 50 frames per second at the moment. However, to an audience like yourself of data sciences, I felt I needed to show also some of the challenges that we have been facing developing this application. First of all, the challenge of detecting small objects. You know, if you think about ImageNet, all these images usually contain rather large objects, cars and people and cats and dogs. What we need to do in our case is to identify very small objects in high-resolution images. Analyzing high-resolution images with deep networks is still too slow, so we need to work on low-resolution images. And then it becomes really a problem to identify small differences in these small objects that we want to recognize. So we needed to implement a two-step approach, where first we have a generic object detector that identifies the regions of interest, and then we can crop these and then work on the high-resolution version with some object classifiers. Another challenge is, of course, that of class imbalance. You are well familiar with that. In our case, we have many different types of objects that we need to recognize, and some of those are more common, others are less common. So it becomes a problem that a classifier then would be biased to the large classes and would basically ignore the small ones. So we will not be able to recognize some rare objects that are on the power lines. A very similar problem is recognizing faults. We cannot expect to have thousands of images of each type of fault that we want to recognize. These are just some of the examples of the faults that we are interested in. So we needed to find a new solution, think something new. The solution we came up with is to mix real and synthetic images. So we build detailed 3D models of the infrastructure, of the components that we want to recognize, and then we can render this. We can change lighting, we can change camera angles, we can like fly around these 3D objects, change backgrounds, and then we can generate as many additional images as we need to both balance the classes and get enough examples of the faults that we want to recognize. So if there is one message that I would like you to bring home from this presentation is that, in our view, deep learning on Azure GPUs is really redefining what cloud solutions can really do. And to finish, I would like to thank my team back home, especially Nyan and Dang, and Ture that has been managing this process. Thank you.
Thank you. So I call that truly mission impossible, NN possible, that is. Now, if you stay around for Satya's keynote demo today, later, you will see yet another magical capability, bringing deep neural networks running in SQL Server to a real application running in a major retailer, a home improvement retailer. And you will see the combination of HoloLens and the experience you can create by the ability of deep neural networks to recognize images and scenery. Okay, don't miss that. It's 4 to 5 p.m. It's Satya's keynote. I know all of you are invited to attend that. Great. So Davide, by the way, showed at the end of his presentation something unique, which was generating synthetic data to augment his training. In the next pattern, I'm actually going to show you something even more interesting, which is using humans in the loop along with machine learning and combining both machine and human intelligence to create really powerful applications. Okay? So this is the fourth pattern. So humans can be used in two places. One, to generate labels for the data that you want to learn from, so humans become teachers. And second, when you have predictions of lower confidence, add the human intelligence in there so you can actually get a better, higher confidence, accurate result. Now, but the challenge then is how do you automate this? How do you put a man behind a machine? And how do you interact with that human through an API? And how do you combine both machine and human intelligence in software? And that's the fourth pattern, and it's best told by our partner, Crowdflower. So let me invite Lucas Beerwald, the founder and chief data scientist of Crowdflower, to tell you about the partnership we have built between Crowdflower and Microsoft to bring the seamless blend of machine and human intelligence together. Lucas?
Hello. Thanks so much, Joseph. So I'm Lucas Biewald, and I'm the founder of Crowdflower. And I've spent my career trying to make machine learning really work for real businesses. My company, Crowdflower, is a human-in-the-loop platform. And we've collected over 2 billion human judgments for companies from Facebook to Home Depot to Bloomberg and thousands of other data science teams. So what is human-in-the-loop, and why does it matter for machine learning? Azure Machine Learning has built an incredibly powerful platform that makes it really easy to do feature selection and model building at scale. But I think there's still major challenges that keep machine learning from going mainstream, and I actually think the human-in-the-loop design pattern can address some of them. So let me explain. Imagine I'm a data scientist, and I want to build a model in a completely new domain. A completely new domain means that I need completely new training data. Actually, a lot of people get stuck here. But Crowdflower makes it easy to have people on the internet build the training data set for you. All you need to do is write down your task exactly how you want it to be labeled, and overnight, you can get millions of records labeled that teaches your machine learning algorithms. So you send this data directly into Azure Machine Learning and build a model. The whole process is so easy, you can have a custom model built in hours. This used to take me months, if not years, to go end-to-end to really deploy a new machine learning model. So this is amazing. But it doesn't always work perfectly. No machine learning algorithm is perfect. And a lot of times, you need perfection to really deploy a model in production. So here, human-in-the-loop design pattern can help again. An 80% accurate solution isn't useful for many applications, but an 80% accurate model that knows where it's accurate and where it's not accurate can actually be very useful. So Azure Machine Learning always outputs a confidence value. It knows the predictions where it's confident and where it's not confident. So as Joseph said, I take the predictions where it's confident and I use them directly. Then I take the predictions where it's not confident and I send them to a human to get them labeled. So I can, in this way, get arbitrary accuracy. An 80% accurate model becomes maybe 80% cost savings, which is great. So how do I actually build this system? Well, that's why I'm so excited today to announce Crowdflower AI powered by Microsoft Azure Machine Learning. We make it now dead simple to build training data sets, feed them into Azure Machine Learning to create custom features and models, and then deploy them with the human-in-the-loop design pattern so they work for real business applications. And this applies across many industries and use cases, and is really in use now, but I wanted to show you a simple, useful example that's personal to me. So here, can we go to the demo, please? So I don't know about you, but I get lots of packages these days, almost every day. And I actually have a security camera outside my apartment door. And so I thought it would be fun to connect that security camera to Microsoft's cognitive services and have it just tell me, is there a package at my door? And actually, this is really, really easy to set up. I really recommend it. And the code's in GitHub, so you can use it. It really works. So I just used the box detection feature in the Vision API. And you can see here, it actually gets it. It says, yes, there's a package. And pretty much all the time when there's boxes, it gets it right. But I only used it for boxes. So I also order Instacart all the time. And Instacart comes in bags. And so when bags come in, the system doesn't know what it's looking at yet. And so here's a great example for human in the loop. And I thought for scalability, I would use the crowd here as my human in the loop. Typically, these are people online. But if you go to a tiny URL I created at tinyurl.com/human-in-the-loop, you can actually help me out here and label this for me. But while you guys are logging in, I thought I would just do this job myself. So you can see I've set up a whole bunch of pictures of boxes or things in front of doors. And we can label a whole bunch of them. So you say, yes, there is a package in this photo. And we can go down and submit our task. And now my code will actually pull this in from the API, and it says, yes, there is a package. So all this code is available on GitHub, and I'll tweet out the link for all of you. I hope that you guys take this and modify it and make it do lots of other exciting things. But you know, this isn't just a toy solution for hobbyists. This was designed to work for real business problems at scale. And we actually have major customers today that are really using it for things that really affect their business. One of the biggest applications is routing support tickets. It sounds simple, but it's really complicated. These days, if you run a consumer app, you get tons and tons of feedback. And if you process it right, you can deliver an amazing customer experience. But one of the problems that happens is that if you have exponential growth, you see exponential support costs because you really want to look at every support ticket. So what you can do here is use Crowdflower AI. So you label all your past tickets with the category that you want for them, and you send it into Azure Machine Learning. This actually works really, really well. It's over 95% accurate for some of our customers. But folks want perfect support. They often want 99% accuracy for a real business process. So where the prediction is not confident, it goes to a human in the loop to get it labeled. And now there's even an extra amazing thing, which is that you can feed that data back into your machine learning model and make it better and better over time. So data scientists call this active learning, but our business customers just think of it as cost savings. And so what happens is, as your company scales exponentially, your support costs scale linearly. And so if this seems interesting to you, at all relevant, we actually have a really exciting hour-long session where we're going to go into detail with the product managers from Microsoft that built the product and the product managers and data scientists from Crowdflower that worked on the product. And we're going to show you how you can really use this for real-world examples. So that's tomorrow at 12:30, and I'd love for you guys to come see it. Thanks.
Thank you.
So in the future, when you see intelligent software, amazing intelligent software, it may not be just machine learning sitting behind it. There may be a human behind it as well, powered by companies like Crowdflower. And so here are a few patterns for machine and human intelligence. Azure Machine Learning, which is one of the services in the Cortana Intelligence Suite with Crowdflower, powering Crowdflower AI. You can have the intelligent database, intelligence DB, with Crowdflower. You can have the intelligent lake with Crowdflower. You can have the deep intelligence in Azure combined with Crowdflower's human-in-the-loop capability. So you can bring all of these things together seamlessly and build human intelligence in wherever you want to have intelligence in. Okay? Very, very powerful. So now let me talk about the last pattern, intelligent bots, or intelligent conversations as a platform. So conversational platforms have become the next generation of human interaction models. So essentially, instead of having millions of apps on your phone, or a very large number of apps on your phone with which you go and interact, you would go to one standard conversational platform, it may be a Skype app, and you will talk to agents that live inside that platform. So you can have a chat agent for customer service. You can have a chat agent for shopping. You can have a chat agent for whatever application you want. And you interact with that chat agent, and the chat agent helps you with whatever you need. And today, we support a number of powerful intelligence capabilities to enable that to happen. Inside of Cortana Intelligence Suite, there is a bot framework that is to build chatbots. Then you have APIs in cognitive services like LUIS, which is a language understanding intelligence service, which allows you to do key phrase extraction from the natural language that people are typing, so you can understand the key phrases that the customer is asking. You can also reason over it. You can have sentiment analysis, and so you can use all of that information to construct the right response back or the right queries into the back-end systems so you pull the right information for the customer in the chat. Right? So that's how you integrate intelligence together with the conversational framework, with the bot framework, so you can deliver powerful chat applications. So if you go to the bot framework gallery page today, you will see a large number of bots pre-created. And there are bots like the Murphy bot, which will take a picture that you upload, blend it with another picture that you like, and create something funny. There are Azure bot that will allow you to monitor Azure jobs. There's a Bing News bot. You can interact with all of these. There are interactive conversational chat bots. And so now let me show this to you visually. We have a demo of how we can build intelligent bots and how they actually work. And to do that, let me invite Daniel Dean, who's a senior data scientist in my team, to show the capability. Daniel?
Thanks, Joseph. Awesome. Hi, everyone. Awesome. So bots are super cool, right? Really cool. They're useful for a lot of scenarios, like call centers, or how many of you guys like pizza? Who likes pizza? Likes pizza? Yeah, almost a good amount, not as many as I would have thought. Who likes ordering pizza on the phone with a real human? Ew, right? Not fun. So bots are really useful for scenarios like that. We can use bots in a lot of different scenarios. Now, there's actually been a bot built for Ignite, a conference that's running at the same time as this one. And what we're going to do here is we're actually going to show you behind the scenes of the Ignite bot, some of those services that Joseph was talking about, and what they actually look like behind the scenes. So in order to build a bot, it sounds really daunting, right? How do you do all of the code? It has to be intelligent. It has to interact with you like a normal human. There's a lot that has to go into a bot. That sounds very, very daunting. But with the bot framework, that gives you the infrastructure to do that. So you can create a bot with a very little code. It gets you up and running really quickly. And it also gives you those channels to connect to your users. Now, you might not want to install an Ignite app, right? Oh, another app that I have to go install. But you already have Skype. You already have Facebook Messenger. Let's see what's next on my schedule. So bots are really useful to getting at your target audience. So let's see, for example, when is Joseph? Is Joseph going to Ignite speaking? Let's see, is Joseph speaking at Ignite? Oh, look at this. I better get going because he's speaking at 11 o'clock today. So he's speaking on the enable digital transformation using the unreasonable effectiveness of ACID. Sounds interesting. Let's also see what's on the schedule for this Thursday. So it can give you individual responses. It also can look at categories. It can interact with your schedule. So obviously here we have the bot framework that's enabling us to do this. Then we also have Lewis. That's that language understanding intelligence service that enables us to create machine learning models and actually train them for the specific application that we're building. And then behind this bot in particular, we're also using Azure Search. And this enables us to actually do full text search, including linguistics in 56 languages, filtering, faceting over data, fuzzy and phonetic matching. So if you go here, let's first look at Lewis. So this is the Lewis. You can see lots of intents behind here. So you can create those intents specific for your application. And also entities. So these are things about those different sessions. Now, we can go in here and actually review what the labels have been and look at the performance of how well the Lewis model is doing. So let's search. Yesterday, I was using this to prepare for here, and I wrote done at the end of it, and it didn't. The bot actually came back and said, I have no idea what you're talking about. What does done mean? Well, that we need to actually tell the bot that actually means goodbye. So in here, I'm going to actually resubmit, tell Lewis I need to understand what done means for this particular scenario, and then retrain the Lewis model. And then the bot, next time you go say done, will understand that that means goodbye in this context. So that is the language understanding intelligence service. Now, if we switch over to Azure Search, we can see here we're going to go into our sessions index, and we can see how Azure Search is working. And this is all of the things that it's looking at, so things like code, abstract speakers. We can even look at our Search Explorer and look at what it looks like from a developer's perspective, if I could spell right, machine learning. And this is the kind of results that you get back. OK, so now to switch over to my data science virtual machine. This is where I have built up the bot framework using the SDKs. You can see as a couple of examples how little code I'm writing here. Here, these inputs are the FACET categories. So I'm simply saying tags and speakers are what I want to be able to search on. And then rendering the search results is a simple code here. As another example, in the intro dialogue, I need to actually prompt users what should they be asking. So here's another example. All we're saying is, what track are you interested in? And then we can go use our emulator to see how that would work. Hello. And select analytics. And this gives you the experience of understanding what the emulator is sending back. So let me switch back. So you can go try this out yourself, ignitebot.azurewebsites.net. So this is a bot framework, Lewis, that language understanding intelligence service, plus Azure Search together to bring you an intelligent app that is looking at lots of data behind it. Thank you.
Thanks, Anya.
Thanks, Joseph.
Thank you.
So bots with intelligence, that is going to be the way we will interact with most applications and most enterprises in the future, because it just makes it so much simpler to have an interaction with an intelligent agent that can pull all the data that you need. No more dumb phone trees, no more painful walking through choices and menus before you get to any answer. By the way, you will see another really interesting application of this bot. If you go to Microsoft support pages, if you're actually going to walk through, there is a very intelligent bot providing answers to you directly, and we are finding it makes an enormous difference to our customers because they can get their answers directly by chatting with the support agent as opposed to walking a phone tree and going to a person and waiting for a long time before you get the right answer, right? So we're just starting to scratch the surface of that. So there are several implementations possible here. You can have bot framework with Lewis, with Cognitive API, the Intelligence DB with the bot framework, the Intelligent Lake combined with the bot framework. And if you especially use Intelligent Lake with the bot framework, you can have extremely sophisticated deep analytics on very large amount of data, stand behind the bot and inform the bot. And you can have very complex queries that are being done inside the Intelligent Lake to empower the intelligence in the bot. Okay? And then deep intelligence plus bot framework as well. So bots infused with intelligence, it will change our world. So let's recap here. So I talked about five patterns. These are patterns for implementing intelligent applications. The intelligence DB, the intelligent lake, deep intelligence, combining machine and human intelligence, and intelligent bots. And supporting all of these today, Microsoft provides an incredible wealth of tools and solutions. For example, we have R and Python tools for Visual Studio to enable R and Python development. Very, very powerful. The Cortana Intelligence Gallery has a template of solutions created by not just Microsoft, but by data scientists like yourself, and have shared published patterns on how to build machine learning applications. There is now notebooks.azure.com, where we have taken Jupyter Notebooks, previously IPython, and hosted it on Azure, and now there are universities using that for teaching classes because the notebook lives entirely in the cloud and can be accessed by a large number of people and can hold both text and code. You have Cortana intelligence competitions happening now. We started off with a brain science competition, and we took data from recordings of human brains, put it out there to predict what the person was seeing, and the results were amazing. People from all over the world participated and beat the results that the original scientists had achieved in accuracy in predicting what people were thinking. So that's there. And then there are Cortana solutions for Quick Start. It's templates for predictive maintenance, for a number of applications that we have built, stitching across all the services so people can get started easily. And recently, by the way, we at Georgia Tech, we ran a hackathon with all of these solutions. And many of the people who participated in that hackathon are actually in this audience, by the way. And you will meet them at this conference. So very exciting. We have taken a platform, exposed not just the platform capabilities, but a lot of examples, solutions, and learning opportunities around all of this. So I encourage all of you to go ahead and experience this. Start with Cortana Intelligence Gallery, and you can start from there and go forward. So really, we are today at the cusp of the intelligent revolution. You know, in about 200 years ago, when the steam engine was first invented, nobody knew that it heralded a revolution called the Industrial Revolution. And today, the cloud and the intelligence platforms you're seeing on the cloud, whether it be from Microsoft or others, that's the steam engine of the future. The intelligence revolution is truly beginning. Thank you.